if you just recount a list of features and go through them logically one by one, that's not going to be very effective as a piece of copywriting. But if you open with a story, grab the attention of the reader and give them reason beyond the purchase itself. I mentioned about the suspension of reality where it's an advertising piece. To think of a piece of copywriting as just an advert is a bit of a, it's a bit self-defeating, really. You are writing an engaging piece of writing that needs to get someone's attention. It needs to hold their attention. The key thing at the end is you need them to take action.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you enjoyed our most recent interviews with Sean D'Souza of Psychotactics and Rytus Loris of Omnisend. I'm really excited to have today on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Glenn Fisher, who's the author of The Art of the Click and host of the All Good Copy podcast. Glenn is a direct response copywriter who provides a host of online resources for copywriters and marketers through his All Good Copy website. For over a decade, he worked with the Agora, a multi-million pound international financial publisher, and in 2018, having helped launch and grow Agora Financial in the UK, he left to write copy on a freelance basis and to focus on coaching aspiring copywriters. He's also a regular speaker at business and marketing conferences. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. Go and check it out. It's free to join. And if you're a member already, just log in to get your resources. In our discussion today, Glenn talked to me about the features of good copy and what authenticity really means. He told me about the CIA framework of good copy, and he told me why is one of the most useful words in copywriting. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Glenn Fisher. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from the other side of the world to me, New Waltham on the east coast of the UK, Glenn Fisher, who's the author of The Art of the Click. He's the founder of allgoodcopy.com, and he also hosts the All Good Copy podcast. So welcome to the podcast, Glenn. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest today.
Thank you for inviting me, Jürgen. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you.
Simon Lamy, who was my guest on episode 169 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you, Glenn. So big hello thank goes you, out to Simon.
Yeah, thank you very much for recommending me.
Yeah. Now, allgoodcopy.com is a free online resource for direct response copywriters and marketers, and your book, The Art of the Click, is all about how direct response copywriting can help people succeed in today's online marketplace. So I'm really looking forward to delving into all things copywriting today with you, since it's such an important but much neglected skill, and I think it covers a whole range of areas, not just written content, but video scripts and audio scripts, even podcast interview scripts, for example. So, but before we start talking about all things copywriting, tell us a bit about your background. Give us a snapshot of how you got to where you are today and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey.
Sure. Well, I always kind of talk about my life in kind of three stages at the moment. I'm in part three at the moment. The first part was I wanted to be a bank manager when I was a young boy and studied accountancy and was kind of on a career path to do that kind of thing, and was working for the local council here in the UK, in my hometown of Grimsby, and was kind of going along that path, and it all was working out quite well. But something happened, something changed in my mindset, and I realized my interests didn't lie in accountancy and that kind of thing. And I made a decision at that point to pursue a career in writing. I realized more and more that I enjoyed reading and jotting little silly stories down and all this kind of thing. So I made the leap whilst I was still relatively young. I left that career path and went back to college, went back to university and as a mature student and studied writing. I knew what I thought I had a talent for writing. People told me that, but I needed to get some kind of proof, some objective proof of that. So I went back to university, and that's when I kind of entered stage two, where I completed that degree and started looking for jobs in writing. I kind of naively thought I'd just go away and become a novelist or something like that, but it doesn't quite happen like that. So I applied for any job I could find, really, and by pure chance, I came across a job advert for what turned out to be, I didn't realize at the time, but it's a multinational company called Agora. And they were looking for copywriters. And I was successful in getting a job there as a junior and opened up a vast world of marketing, copywriting, online, offline, all this world that you're very familiar with. And I became a student of that world and was very lucky to work with a lot of very successful, very well-known people in the particularly in the direct mail industry. And that was stage two. I worked with Agora for about a decade, just over, and I still do now in stage three. But a year or so ago, I made the decision to go freelance. And since then, I've published a book on copywriting, and I still work for Agora, writing letters for them, but also work for a number of other companies and agencies, helping as many businesses as I can use direct response copywriting and the lessons I've learned over the years to improve their marketing.
Mm. Yeah, that's it.
Where part four goes, I'm not quite sure.
I hope part three is not the end of it. that's an interesting journey, though, that you kind of had this idea of becoming a novelist and then end up writing for sales and marketing.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of, people often, well, I analyze it myself, but people do often ask me, whenever you say you're a writer of any kind, the first thing is to go to kind of the world of fiction. Mm. And that's kind of where I wanted to be, I guess, as I was, when I discovered I had this desire to write, an interest in writing. I liked making up stories. It was, as a kid, I'd read the kind of classics, like modern classics like Orwell and James Joyce and all these things. And I assumed that all writing had to be very serious and have a message that was very important and what have you. And then I discovered, and that for me, I wasn't ready for that at that stage of my life. I didn't think I was capable of doing that. But then I discovered writers. In fact, it was the short stories of Woody Allen that I discovered first, and then I discovered Groucho Marx's letters and stuff like this. When I discovered that you can write funny, you can be funny and use writing to tell stories in a different kind of way and not quite so serious, and that appealed to me at the time. So that got me into it, and I realized I liked the creativity, and I realized you could kind of break rules and use writing in different ways. Then when I needed to earn a living from doing writing, copywriting provided that outlet. But then over the years, I've realized that creativity itself isn't limited to just being about creating fictions. It's being creative might be that you're challenged to sell a very, on the surface, a very simple and perhaps what other people would call boring product. But the creative aspect of copywriting and salesmanship is to find what's unique about that product, what's interesting, what's fun about it. So I've been very lucky to discover a way to earn money using my skill that still gives me that opportunity for creativity. And then as I've written the book and as I've kind of grown and matured in my understanding of writing, and I kind of try and analyze myself and my actions as much as possible, but I've realized that I don't need to be constrained by the idea that a non-fiction book has to be very dry and can't be strange and break rules and have very creative elements in it. And that's really opened up a lot of different ideas for me, especially where, as an author, for my next books and the ideas I've got, I'm kind of going to try and break the rules a little bit there. But it's certainly been interesting for me it was that realization that creativity isn't just about being writing in the fiction world. You can be very creative in advertising and marketing too.
Yeah. All right. So one of the things you said in the book, and it's sort of quite a ways in, that resonated with me because I have a science background, and I wonder if you could explain that a little bit more. And that's it's something like successful marketing shares much with the principles of science.
Sure. Well, that came from reading Feynman, Richard Feynman, who's a fantastic writer in his own right. He's obviously more known for his work in physics and particularly working on the kind of atom bomb and all that stuff with Oppenheimer. But I read his books. There was a period where I was reading. He's got two or three, and they kind of aim to break down very complicated kind of quantum physics and all this kind of stuff into simple and easy to understand ways. So I would recommend anyone listening to check those books out. But what he was talking about and what I talk about in the book was his process to testing, which shares so much with successful direct response marketing. Any direct response marketer will tell you that it all comes down to testing and measuring the response. That's the advantage that direct response has over indirect response. It's that much more easy to measure the effects of your advertising, and then you can tweak and change it. And no one truly knows what will work. The best way to find out is to test it in the market in a controlled way. But Feynman was talking about the same idea. And what I liked about one of his approaches to testing was to take the kind of kernel of an idea, just that initial thought, and initially test that. But don't think that that hypothesis is the end of the game and that the answer is, oh, right, well, that A versus B, B won, and then you stop testing. He would then take the result of the first test, throw in a completely different variable, ask something completely different, look at it from a completely different angle, test it against that, and you'd carry on asking that question, approaching it like that to find completely different hypotheses that you might not have had originally. It reminds me of once I can remember a copywriter wrote a very successful promotion, and it's very easy when you write something that works well to assume that it's finished, that you've got the best answer, so to speak. But it's very silly in a world where we have very low percentages in terms of open rates and conversion rates. It's very silly to assume that you've written the absolute best piece of sales material you can absolutely write. And he was chastised when he said, oh yeah, I've tested this, when someone challenged him and said, all right, and what did you test against the control? What did you test against the winner? And the copywriter hadn't tested anything. And obviously when you then put fresh eyes on it, it sounds ridiculous to say, well, you think you've discovered the best answer, and you obviously haven't. So I just like that Feynman, his scientific approach to constantly adding new variables, adding new tests. And I think that's a lesson that every writer can have. It's good to enjoy your success and take time and pat yourself on the back for a short while if you hit a winner, but then as quickly as possible you should be looking again at what you've done, why it's worked, and changing it and trying to beat yourself and get a better response as soon as you can.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't actually read Feynman's books that you referred, so I must go and have a look at those. But to me, it's just intuitive that that's how you test things, and I guess it's because of my scientific training and background.
Sure, yeah, it's funny.
If you test two things in an A-B test, then the one that comes out giving you the better result is not the best thing. It's just the better of those two. So, if you then come up with an alternative theory, which is the way science works, you theorize on something, you test that, and it either proves the theory or disproves the theory, and then you continue testing. So it's, to me, that's really good to know that there's a simple explanation founded in quantum physics there.
it's interesting to me. I've been very lucky, especially with the publication of the book, that I get to speak to so many people of varying experience in the industry, and I've very quickly realized that a lot of people, you can never assume knowledge. I mean, we all know that, but I always suggest this to anybody who's got a message to tell. You should always be very confident in telling your message, because someone out there will find your message interesting. They might not have come across it before, and whereas myself and you, we both find it quite intuitive to test things like that. And of course, when you found a winner in a split test, that just means you found a better option, and there might be an even better option. But a lot of people don't. It's often they might be too busy, or they've got too many stresses and strains elsewhere in their business to think about that and give it the time. So it's everybody should try and kind of give themselves a little bit of objectivity there and look at things with fresh eyes.
Yeah. And the other thing that particularly online is the environment changes so rapidly. So things change. And so even between A and B, where B came out better in a certain environment, that might have changed so that A comes out better. So at least if you're constantly testing things and keep improving, that you're kind of taking into account any changes that might be occurring in the environment you're operating in.
Definitely.
So in all the work you've done, can you give us some ideas of what the features are of good copy?
It's a big question. It's a big question, and I'll answer it with big kind of fundamentals, maybe is the best way. Good copy is what works. It's a very silly thing to say almost, but it is true. If it works, it works. Bill Bonner, the founder of Agora, always famously says that he's in a what business, not a why business, and is interested in what works, not necessarily why it works. That said, you do spend quite a lot of time analyzing why things and trying to figure that out. But if it works, it works. And therefore, what usually makes good copy work, I find it needs to be authentic. It needs to be real. It needs to have a kernel, a fundamental idea behind it. It's often referred to as a big idea or what have you. But I think it's just that idea needs to be real. It needs to feel initially, straight away, without any doubt, that there's something in this. And I think that's usually what kind of that impossible to grasp big idea comes about from. It's understanding that this has an authentic, real element to it. It needs to have that. It needs to be compelling. It needs to be in the sense that it needs to attract people. It needs to be shocking. It needs to be something new that feels like it might be able to make a difference. Like it's something that stops you in your tracks. It does have to have that attention-grabbing quality. But that said, the best copy I've found over the years, and it was another very good copywriter, John Ford, who kind of discussions with him led me to this, but it has to, good copy, the best adverts, be they short little Facebook ads or a really big long copy direct mail sales letter, the idea and behind what you're selling, the message you're trying to make, it has to be something that people are willing to understand. They have to want to believe it, and somewhere probably in the back of their mind already think it's true. If you're making a statement or if you're making a claim, a promise, they have to want to believe it. They have to go, it can't just be something shocking that everybody disagrees with. Very few people will change their minds reading a piece of copy. You're looking to confirm a thought that people already have. The best copy does that. Don't get me wrong, there is plenty of copy and occasions that will kind of, where the exception proves the rule and things do change, and they're often groundbreaking situations. But the majority of good copy will confirm an idea that's already in the customer's mind. So if it does that, if it confirms, I often use a kind of formula. I had to boil this down once, and I tried to do the Steve Jobs thing of doing three slides. And I came up with confirm, that the idea has to confirm something in the reader's mind. It has to inform them. So that covers that compelling idea, that it's something new, that it's something authentic that's going to change the reader's mind. And if you can confirm an idea, inform the reader of something new, and you can then get their attention and present that copy in a new and interesting way that they've not seen before, then you usually are onto a good thing. So confirm, inform, and then astound the reader is usually a pathway to good copy. There are obviously a million and one tiny little tweaks and elements of good copy that you can use. There's technical things like adding scarcity and adding urgency to things. But philosophically, I guess you could say, and as a kind of overarching idea, if you can confirm an idea that someone already has, give them some new information about it, and then deliver it in a very interesting way, that's usually going to get you somewhere good.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's a pretty good overview. One of the things that I'm curious about is what your understanding of authenticity is, because you mentioned it a few times there in that. Mm-hmm. And if you think of things like building scarcity into copy, or saying, you know, this is a discount just for you, special audience, or something like sure. that. You know, I sometimes wonder about the authenticity of those things.
Sure.
Just a technique to force a quick decision, or whether the, you know, the general authenticity is there. And I guess some of them are and some of them aren't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point to raise. I found it's a very busy world, the world of marketing and copywriting. Everybody's got ideas and wants to share their thoughts. And in that, you get a lot of people using words, and words quickly become cliche. And authenticity is one of those I've found, much to my annoyance, because it informs a lot of what I do. And I try, and I think the key to good copy is to message your argument in an authentic way. The easiest way to do that is to be authentic. We spend a lot of time as copywriters trying to recreate authenticity, but rather than trying to recreate it, if you can just be authentic, then you're going to win. But you raise a very good point in the fact that there are all these technical tools and options we have at our disposal, such as a scarcity situation, or a special discount offer that's only for those who respond before 11 o'clock. And the way I try and approach that, and would recommend anyone doing the same, is to start with the authenticity in your mind. You've got to look at the product and say, well, what is real about this? If scarcity and offers and stuff like that doesn't need to just be a false situation. There is often in a product, if you dig deep enough and you keep asking why, which is, I always say, is one of the most useful words in copywriting, to keep asking why, and you will find very often that there is an authentic reason why a reader might need to purchase the product today rather than tomorrow. You don't need to just say because there's only 500 copies available. Again, if you ask, well, why is there only 500 copies available? If the answer is because we're trying to create scarcity, then that's not going to be a very authentic piece of copy, and therefore I'd try and avoid using that. Don't get me wrong, in the world of business, I know people will have to rely on stuff like that now and again, but it's worth taking the time to keep asking, well, why? And if you take shares, for instance, if you're selling a newsletter, as I've sold a lot in my time of newsletters that advise investors to buy certain shares, then we know if it's a small cap share and a lot of people moving into it would potentially inflate the price in a negative way, and it would shoot up and then fall back down. You can't have thousands of people going in and buying that share. So you have a natural, real, authentic scarcity element that you can then talk about. You really can only share it with a small number of people, and you should use that as a point to discuss. You should explain and be honest about that and tell the reader, look, this is the reason why. Another good one might be if you're trying to sell, a self-help book where you also offer a webinar or something, or a one-to-one session, then realistically you can only speak to so many people at a time. So you've got natural scarcity there. If you haven't got the scarcity, if there isn't a natural reason for it, if you're just doing it because you're trying to kind of use it as a technical trick to encourage more sales, then don't use it if you can. Go to one of the many other factors. Is there a time reason? Is there something else happening in the world around the story that you're telling that you can attach some urgency to? It's looking for real things. And I think the best way is just to always start with what is real, what is authentic in your mind, and go for that. If you get to the end and there's just no real thing, then that's obviously a decision that you need to make as a business and as a copywriter as to whether you want to use these technical elements to kind of add a bit of false urgency, as they say. But I would encourage as much as possible to try and be genuine or authentic with all of those tools.
Yeah, well, that clarifies it quite a bit. And you did use an example there that I've used in the past, where I've put together programs that part of the program was working with me one-on-one. So clearly there's only so much time I have to work with.
Exactly.
I say, well, you know, I'm going to cap it at some number. So I make a decision based on how many people I can serve. And I always say that, you know, I've kept the number probably on the conservative side, but the reason for that is that I really want to do my very best for those people. And so by, you know, trying to inflate that number and cram more people in, then it's unfair on everyone because I'm spread more thinly. So I guess that's one where there is an authentic aspect to it. Hmm. But often you see things where there's just no explanation offered. It's like, okay, there's 10 available, and it may even be a physical product. And say, well, why is there only 10 available? Because you could make.
Yeah, and I think that's just it's a missed opportunity, really. Yeah. If anything, if as I say, this more talking to the readers of copy than the copywriters themselves. But if you're seeing that where there isn't an explanation for a piece of copy or a claim or what have you, you're going to know deep down that there's something going on there. So it's kind of silly. As a, I always try and read every piece of copy I write objectively and read it aloud. If it feels silly and unsubstantiated, if you're saying there's only 500 copies and then there's never another reference to why, then that's strange. It's like a Hitchcock film where you kind of have this thing at the start and then it never resolves. Like you wouldn't be happy with that. So you need to resolve every question and objection that a reader might have. And if you've got a claim there that there's only 10 copies available, a natural objection from the reader is going to be, well, why is there only 10 copies available? So you need to answer that question. But it's also a good thing to answer that question. It pushes you as the copywriter to either give a very good reason, and which will only further support why you need to act quickly, or it will allow you to strengthen the copy by adding a reason that provides that authenticity for it. So it's definitely something to, I would avoid relying on the more cynical tools of the trade in and of themselves. You use them to support the actual case you're making.
Yeah. So are you a fan of short copy or long copy?
I guess I'm
good question because it might be, it depends.
I in my own podcast, the amount of questions I ask that could answer, it depends. By default, I guess I'm a long copy fan. I've spent most of my career writing 10,000 word sales letters. So most people are shocked by that when they then ask me to write a 500 word blog post or something. So I'm a fan of my answer, and I've written on the argument of long copy versus short copy for many a time, and I've read many pieces about it. I without being too much on the fence or trying to be too clever about it, I'm a fan of whatever length copy works. You'll often find, as long as you know what the aim of the copy is, and what I mean by that is if it's looking to make a transaction at the end for £1,000 ticket item, then you're unlikely to be able to do that with three lines.
Yeah.
You're going to need longer. If you're trying to sell a free report, then yeah, that's going to be much easier with a shorter piece of copy. That said, if you're just trying to raise awareness, if it's a branding exercise, then yeah, short copy, a memorable one-liner that everybody's going to be saying, then short copy is going to be better than no one's going to remember a 10,000 word sales page if you're just trying to raise brand awareness. So long as you identify what the copy's for, what is the end goal that you're trying to get out of it, and then usually that will dictate naturally how long that copy needs to be. And if it goes into the realms of long copy, you often find that the longer the better. When video sales letters were introduced, probably about 5 or 6 years ago now, I lose track of time, but when they started being done, and then you got the webinar format where people would be doing an hour interview, and then at the end just kept asking questions, and invariably the testing finds that the longer you go on, the more questions you answer, the more you're going to sell. And that's simply because it's a case of information. It's a case of persuading a reader. If they're not persuaded after three lines and you give them three more lines, they might be persuaded then. If not, they're not buying predominantly because they're not persuaded. So there's an increased chance that the longer you go on and the more you talk to them about the product, the more likely they are to buy. Of course, they might just be non-buyers, and that's gone in. It's kind of irrelevant, but you're always talking in your sales piece to people you hope to persuade to buy, and often giving them more information about a product and overcoming more objections is going to persuade them more effectively. So it's all about what works and what works for the right particular situation. I that said, as a one disclaimer, long copy shouldn't just be long for the sake of it. That's what I don't like. It's not an excuse to just write reams of nonsense. Every element of a long copy sales letter, even a 10,000 word piece, needs to be there for a reason. You should be able to go through the longest piece of copy and ask, well, why is that there? It might be to hold the reader for a while in a kind of holding pattern until you've got to the next kind of technical thing that you want to talk to them about, but it needs to have a reason. If it's just there for waffle, then it needs to go.
Yeah. And I like the idea of making sure your answer all the questions, because that's where I think that's the value of the longer copy. If there is a big ticket item, then there's likely to be a lot of questions. So, you know, what's included, what's not included, how's it going to work, what happens if I kind of change my mind? You know, there's all these obvious questions that are very generic, and then of course there's specific ones depending on the product. So if answering as many questions as possible certainly makes the copy longer.
Sure. It's a copy chief for in America, a guy called Joe Schrieffer, he developed something called copyboarding, which is, it comes from storyboarding that the Disney Pixar people invented for their films. They do these storyboards that kind of mapped out the whole film. And Joe developed this idea of copyboarding, where it was very much, it's very similar in the sense that you map out the entire piece of a long copy sales promotion. But what was really effective about that approach, specifically, that even if you don't want to map out your whole thing, it was, he used questions and objections to inform how to map out, how to provide this narrative. So you would ask, you would make a claim, your product can do X, and then you would invite questions from as many people as you want to speak to. It's useful to get people who aren't familiar with the product, make that claim to them, and just get them to ask as many questions. How do you know? Why do you know? Why does it do that? How does it do that? And you write all of these objections down, and you will very quickly start to see your copy forming, your argument coming together. And then if you can turn them objections into statements that explain that answer the objection, then you very quickly have basically a contents page of a sales piece that you can then fill in. So it's the objections-led copywriting, I think you can kind of call it. It's very effective, especially if you've newer to it or you're limited for time. That's probably one of the best ways to go. There are drawbacks to that, because sometimes you'll answer objections that aren't necessarily there, or what have you. Or you'll, someone said that to me once, and I it stuck in my mind. There's always flaws with everything. There is no perfect way. You take bits that you find useful, but I think having those objections, going through that, I personally use that as my second kind of go at the initial idea in the research stage, because what if you only lead by objections, you kind of lose an element of the excitement and the rawness, I find. So what I'll do first is just come at it from a really excited, this is the best thing ever, throw myself into it. Why do I love this? What captures it about me? Get all of that stuff, because if you lead with objections, you might miss some of that. You might overanalyze to the point where you've kind of missed some of that innocence and excitement about the product. So I usually see what's exciting about it, go for that, but then do sit and go through the objections afterwards. I find it very useful.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something a few moments ago, and I know you wrote a blog post about this recently, and that's proofreading, but reading out loud and recording it in your own voice. And it's interesting because I was working with somebody today on starting up a podcast and getting them used to recording, and we did some reading and just general recording stuff. But then she'd written her first episode, and I said, well, why don't we record that first episode? Why don't just read it? Because we'll have to refine that a little bit so that it sounds not read and interesting, but let's start by reading it. And it was interesting. She read through it and then listened back and said, well, I don't like that at all. I'm going to have to rewrite that completely. So I thought, oh, there's an example of how that works, that proofreading out loud.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's one of the simplest yet hardest things I've found for a copywriter to do is to improve their work is to read it aloud. But it's just so effective when you it always used to be the case, I don't know how this is for other people, but you'd kind of write your stuff on your computer, you'd print, and then to proof it, you'd print it out, and you'd have that kind of tangible thing in front of you, and you'd read through it in your mind, visually looking at the piece. And that would find various kind of phrases or grammatical errors that you weren't quite happy with, and you'd kind of craft it very visually. But when you read it out, there's something different happens, and there's I don't know the science behind it. I have seen people talking about it in the way the eye visually reads stuff and communicates it with the mind. But I've found that the easier a piece of copy is to read aloud, the more effective it almost always is when it actually gets sent out. And it goes back to that authenticity as well. There's certain turns of phrase and little kind of weird grammatical mistakes that look wrong on paper almost, or wouldn't be quite right if you were writing it out to be published as an English essay. And I'm sure my English teacher would probably scream at half of the copy I've written over the years, but it relates better to the reader when you see that that little colloquialism or that little turn of phrase that is a bit weird, but it's how you speak. It's just, it makes it feel more natural, and it makes it feel like someone's talking to you one-on-one. And that ultimately breaks down the barrier, the ultimate objection to all sales pieces, which none of us really ever discuss or think about. But there is a suspension of reality where you know you're being advertised to. Like when you get a letter through the post, that's a long copy sales letter, or you see an advert on the underground wall, or you see something in the back of your Sunday Times magazine, it's an advert. It's not someone actually talking to you. It's an advert there. It's not real. But we kind of, we allow that. We go, oh no, I understand that. I understand this is an advert, which is a weird thing in itself. But what we're trying to do, as much in the language that we use as copywriters and in the techniques we use, is to really kind of undermine that weirdness and speak as directly as we can in the most authentic and honest way. And when you edit your writing on the page to be more like the way you speak, I think that helps enormously with that. So I would recommend everybody to do it. People probably usually go out, do it once, and then kind of don't bother. But I have found, at times, sometimes I don't do it myself, but majority of time I found it a much quicker, an effective way to edit things in the long run. If you read through it visually, you'll probably have to go through twice because you'll miss a couple of things. But if you read it aloud and you have the discipline to check yourself, obviously recording it and listening back is helpful because then you can stop and change. Or if you have someone reading it to you, then you can pause them and you can hear it and listen to it objectively. But ultimately, it does seem to take a little bit longer initially, but I think it saves you time in the long run. And as I say, from my personal experience, I can't speak for everybody else, but I've always found when I read a longer copy sales letter and it just flows, and I can read it aloud, and I'm not stopping and starting and changing the phraseology of something. Invariably, they seem to they're the ones that go and work well. So yeah, I definitely encourage people to do it.
Yeah. And that was certainly a bit of an eye opener for me, but I was alert to it because I read your article just before. And also I do change my scripts for podcasts based on when I record them. Sometimes I get halfway through a sentence and I think that doesn't make any sense at all. So I'll change that. So I have experience it myself, but in terms of the written blog posts that I do, I haven't been doing the recording and checking back. So I'll start incorporating that practice into my work.
Sure. You'll have to let me know how it goes.
Now, you also talk about the importance of narrative. So give us some examples of that around, you know, how to use stories and metaphors and parables, because that's something that I find really fascinating. And yet I don't think there's a lot of people that do it well.
Yeah, well, I mean, this obviously speaks to it predominantly to longer copy. But at the same time, I think it can equally, the principles behind the importance of narrative and drama in any piece of copy, whether it's a 500 word blog post or even a shorter piece. I'm interested by this idea because I'm reading a book at the moment, and I don't like being nasty about other authors because I don't like people being nasty about me. So I won't say the book, but I'm reading it and it's just really kind of, it's boring. I'm reading it and I want to enjoy it, but it's boring. And I was thinking, well, why is it boring? Because it's well written. There's no doubt about that. It's covering themes that I'm interested in. And I've enjoyed other books, but I realized that there was no drama in it. There was no plot. There was nothing really grabbing me about it. And it was almost quite a lazy account of just recounting life. Now, one of the reasons I ultimately became a copywriter is because I definitely didn't want to be a journalist. And the reason I didn't want to be a journalist is because I feel like that the majority of them, there are obviously very good investigative journalists, but the majority of them are just reporting stories and they just share the detail. And that to me in copy is like just talking about the features and just saying, oh, well, it does this, it has this, it's what have you. You've got to, obviously, copywriting 101 is to turn the features into benefits and how will it actually affect the reader. But more than that, I think it's about putting creating emotion. And the way to target emotions is by telling stories. That's how we as humans communicate. We tell each other stories and we have these dramas and we care for the characters, we care about what's happening and we want to find out what's happening. There's no wonder, I don't read these books myself, but there's no wonder the top 10 charts are always filled with very seemingly simple books that are quite crimey and plot driven because people like that. And as copywriters, you have to find out what people like and what keeps people reading. And it's so often narrative, it's so often drama and structurally teasing people along. And then you look at a piece of long copy and go, well, what's the aim of this? I need to get someone to the end of a 10,000 word letter. I can't do that by just recounting facts for 50 pages. I need to have drama in there. I need to tell a story. I need to engage people in that way. And that's where the importance of narrative, the importance of storytelling comes in. And for me, that's one of the reasons why I encourage people to not just get lost in the technicals and the copywriting books and marketing books. You've got to read as much as possible from as many variable niches and formats and strange stories about whatever you can find in history and fiction and study narrative and figure out what dramatic elements keep you reading and incorporate them into your copy. So it comes back to what I said at the start about the creativity of copywriting. If you just recount a list of features and go through them logically one by one, that's not going to be very effective as a piece of copywriting. But if you open with a story, grab the attention of the reader and give them reason beyond the purchase itself. I mentioned about the suspension of reality where it's an advertising piece. To think of a piece of copywriting as just an advert is a bit of it's a bit self-defeating, really. You are writing an engaging piece of writing that needs to get someone's attention. It needs to hold their attention. The key thing at the end is you need them to take action. Ultimately, if you're watching a soap on television, it's the same. You need to get people to watch it. You need to engage them through it. And then you need to get them to watch the next episode. So you have a cliffhanger at the end. It's the same qualities that you need in copy. And just because it's a piece of advertising or a piece of marketing in inverted quotes, that's no reason not to be creative, engaging, have drama, have heroes, have villains of the piece. It needs to have that narrative running through it to engage someone for a length of time.
Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to incorporate a lot more of that in my own writing, and it's definitely a struggle for me. But I've got this philosophy now that everything is a metaphor. So whether it's something you read or even, you know, the mundane things that happen to us every day, and this is what I'm struggling with a little bit, is what can I write about today? Well, nothing really happened today. It was just a normal run-of-the-mill day. I sort of, everything was routine. But then, you know, sometimes I'll come up with something that is routine, happens every day, but it's actually a metaphor for something that I want to get a message across about. So making that connection is something that I'm working really hard on.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to go. It's like to figure out that metaphor of why, what is it about that seemingly mundane thing, but what is that like? Another good way, someone challenged me. I was talking about this, the same idea at a talk I did, in Edinburgh in Scotland, and someone pulled it out, and they, I said, give me the most boring thing you can think of, and I'll tell you how you can put that into a story. And they said, a spoon. And I usually use like a pencil for my metaphor. I think it might be in the book, but they said a spoon. So I quickly had to think on my feet, and I it was quite challenging. And I was like, oh God, what's the, but then I came to the idea, and I thought, well, what's good about this particular spoon? And I went through the various things. The benefit of the spoon is, the feature of the spoon is that it's got a deep spoon end. I don't know what you'd call that bit, but it's got a deep bowl at the bottom of the spoon. The benefit of that is that it can better hold an egg, so it's less likely to fall off. But then if you want to put that into a narrative, into an emotive situation, I told a story of a kid who always got picked on at school, and he is always last to be picked in sports day and all this kind of thing. But his mum gave him this particular spoon for this sports day and for the egg and spoon race. Mm. And because it had this deep well that held the spoon better than all the other kids, he was able to win the race. It was the proudest moment, felt achieved, that he'd achieved something great and all this kind of stuff. And it's a silly thing. It's taking it to an extreme, but it just shows that even a spoon, you can find a benefit, you can find an emotive way to tell the story of that particular spoon. And if you can do it for a spoon, then you can certainly do it for a product that's loaded with interesting features. Or if you're telling a story about what you did and how you experienced your day, there are always ways. It's just about asking why, looking around and filling your head with as many ideas as possible.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is wonderful, Glenn. I could go on talking copy and ideas and writing things for forever. We haven't even touched on a lot of the things in the book yet, but I'm aware of the time. So I think we should move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's a series of five questions that we'll get some really quick answers from you. Hopefully something really insightful and inspire the audience to go and do something awesome today.
Sure.
We'll start with what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I would say read. It's boring, but just you've just got to read every day. Make time for reading. Everybody pushes it out, and it's the last thing they do. But I would invest in yourself and give yourself, even if it's just half an hour. It's not about how much you read. It's just about keeping it constant and working through different ideas. All the ideas are already out there. You've just got to find them.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Be silly. And by that, I mean, I'm a very silly person, and whatever things come into my mind that might be ridiculous and make absolutely no sense, but I allow them to, and I encourage my brain to think in that way, because now and again, what seems like a strange and silly idea actually might, with a bit of tweaking and a bit of sculpting into something more practical, might actually be the idea that ends up being the good one. So allow yourself to be silly.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great approach. I think one of Edward de Bono's techniques, one of his many techniques, is to turn things on their head in a silly way and humorous way. And that's a way that he suggests to provoke new ideas.
Yeah, no, I agree with that very much.
So is there a resource that you use most often? One resource?
The internet, really. I would say the internet and Google, like, it's just like a basic thing. But more for a more interesting answer, I would say other people, and specifically other people not related to marketing, people outside of your marketing and company business bubble. My partner, my parents, my friends who have no interest in what I'm trying to do or what work I'm working on. I use them immensely, and they have no baggage. I always say that people in the business have a lot of baggage. If you ask me about copy, I want to prove that I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So I will look at your piece of copy with a different mindset than someone who couldn't care less, and therefore you need to do that, but there are disadvantages to that. So one of the biggest resources I have is the people around me, and I do use them a lot.
Yeah, that's great, and it gives you a different perspective if they're looking at things without the knowledge or expertise that is specific to that topic, but they've got knowledge and expertise in other things.
Exactly.
So what's the best way to keep a project on track?
That's a very difficult question. I use, on a purely technical level, I use a program called Asana, ASANA.com, and it's just a very simple time management scheduling tool where you can put a list of jobs that you've got to do in the day. I use that to monitor what I'm doing. Besides that, I've kind of studied myself and been very honest about how long it usually takes things to do. So I'd record yourself, and if you have to do a particular task, record it, see how long it takes, and then you can use that for future reference. Other than that, it is a very difficult thing, time management, I think, for copywriters particularly, because as I say, copywriting isn't really about writing, it's about the ideas that you're writing about, and they can come from anywhere. They can be bloody annoying and not appear when you're meant to be working that morning, and you can't be bothered to write. So you need a flexibility, and you need to kind of know yourself and understand yourself. One of the tips I always try and encourage is, in the time management sense, is if you get stuck, if you can't write, and or the idea isn't coming at that particular moment, if you're able to, I realize a lot of people work in kind of traditional business times and 9 to 5 and what have you, but if you can stop immediately at that point, don't dig and dig and dig, because you're not going to find anything, or you're not going to produce anything of worth. Go and enjoy yourself, go and do something else. But kind of mark that time down and give it back to the work later. Ultimately, it's, as I say, it's a very idealistic and difficult way to live. But if you're able to do that, you will generally find that you're a bit better at managing your time. So I would say study yourself, have a system in place if you can to allocate your time. And the reason I like Asana is that if I've got a job, I've got an afternoon of writing, and I can't do it that afternoon, or I sit down and the idea is not there, I can move it around in that schedule so that I can come back to it another time. But it's very hard. My sympathy goes out to all the writers in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I find, well, we use Asana as well, and we've set up boards and content calendars so that...
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we kind of set up schedules for when we need to publish things or when we decide to publish things. But also we've got Kanban boards set up in terms of when something's in draft form and when something's being researched, when we're doing the research on it and when we're writing it and so on. So that's always a good way to just keep track of where we're at with certain longer bits of copy of the podcast in particular. But the other point you mentioned is a great point, is just switching off and allowing your mind to regenerate by doing something you enjoy. I find I'm a keen bike rider. I find if I go out, particularly on my own, when I'm not socializing with somebody else, to ride the bike and then just focus on enjoying that bike ride, that I come back and there's about 1,000 ideas in my head.
Sure.
And it's it just kind of regenerates the mind for some reason.
Yeah, no, it's. I have the same. I'll walk the dog, or I'll have a bath, or I'll go to the cinema, or something like that. It's a luxury and it's a curse of any creative in that you kind of mind is always on, and you never know when it's going to come. So it's. I've been doing this for nearly two decades now, and I'm still trying to figure out how my mind works. We get a bit better each year, but yeah. It's an ongoing struggle.
All right. And the last question of the buzz, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be themselves. That sounds like a nice answer, but it's very true. You've got to be yourself and be honest about who you are, what you believe, how you act in the world will come through in your copywriting. It will come through in the way you interact with people in the business situations. If you try and present a different persona or act in a cynical way, even if you never get found out from a client or from a reader or what have you, you will not be happy in yourself because it's tiring to be someone else. I imagine actors probably go through this quite a lot, but my biggest success was when I realized that I wasn't a certain type of kind of like online personality. I'm a silly person. I have fun. I like having a laugh with people. Yet I was looking at contemporaries, and they were very serious and saying very valuable, sharing very valuable information, and they wouldn't be seen messing around doing X, Y, or Z. And I was like, oh, right. And then I thought, well, that's just not me. Like, I want to have fun. I want to have a laugh, and I want to be silly. And when I kind of doubled down on that and went, well, actually, in that case, why don't I do things that are more stranger and seem, in quotes, unprofessional? There's nothing silly unprofessional, but just less things that aren't in the top 10 ways to market yourself online. It was the weirder things that started getting more traction, and I had more fun with it, and it was more successful. So I would encourage everyone to be themselves. That's the best way to give yourself the edge.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have said that, but you've given a really great example of that in practice. So thanks for that. So this has been great, Glenn. Where can people reach out to learn more about the book, The Art of the Click, and also the All Good Copy site?
And so the book you can find on Amazon, The Art of the Click, if you search for that. It's published through Harriman House, so you can get hold of it there too. You can find out more about me at allgoodcopy.com. There's usually a weekly article there, and I'm doing a podcast myself where I talk to different copywriters. It's very silly. And then I've got a website, theglennfisher.com, which is updates on kind of things that I'm doing. every now and then, or you can find me on Twitter. I use Twitter a lot. I find that very useful for communicating. And that's my handle on there is @allgoodcopy. Or if you just want to see pictures of my dog, you can find me on Instagram. But there's various channels you can find me. But I think I'm nearly the top Glenn Fisher on Google. There was a Canadian ice hockey player who was outdoing me, but I think I'm nearly taking over his mantle now.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll include all the links to those in the show notes, except for the ice hockey yeah. player. People can dig that out themselves if they want to find that one. All right. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
What would be the number one piece of advice I'd give to anyone? I'm trying to think of a useful, simple way to, and I'll say, don't overcomplicate things. People try to put a lot of theory and what have you. I mean, look at me saying this, I've written a whole book about copywriting, but ultimately you just need to tell a good story and be persuasive. But you can overcomplicate things in business. And I've found working with a lot of businesses in the, particularly in the past year, business is really hard. There's loads of stuff for you to sort out and do. And it creates this sense of panic and complications and all this kind of stuff. As much as possible, you should try and get down to simple, fundamental things. Does this make more sales? Is this good for the customer? If you can get down to simple things and have that kind of belligerence to just keep asking those basic questions, I've found that probably gets you in a much better place, and you'll have much less stress.
All right, great. Thanks. So finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
Who would I like you to interview? I would love to hear, we're talking about someone practical here, aren't we? Not a not Ernest Hemingway or something.
I'd love to get Hemingway on, but I think there might be
problems there. With that.
Yeah.
I always like to hear from, I think Dave Trott is a really interesting guy. He's a creative director in the UK. And he's just published a new book through my publishers. He's really good. So I'll go with Dave Trott.
All right. Well, we'll get an introduction to Dave from you and see if we can get him on the podcast as well and maybe chat about his new book as well. All right. Well, thanks so much, Glenn. This has been fascinating, learning all your insights and talking copywriting in great detail. And I've really enjoyed this episode of the podcast, and I hope you have too. I've had a lot of fun. I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Same to you. Thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure talking. I hope it's useful to your listeners.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that entertaining and informative conversation with Glenn and, like me, learned a lot from what he shared. What I particularly liked were Glenn's take on authenticity in copy, and how to ensure that by asking yourself why you're making that statement, why you're making that claim, you can determine whether you are being authentic. Also, the idea of copy that must make a difference to the reader. I'd love to know what you took away from Glenn's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Glenn Fisher. That is GLENNFISHER, or lowercase, or one word, innovabiz.co/Glenn Fisher. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Glenn there, as well as links to the All Good Copy website, the podcast, and the Art of the Click book, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Glenn suggested we interview Dave Trott, the author of 1 plus 1 equals 3, a masterclass in creative thinking, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Dave, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Glenn Fisher. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Also, check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show at talesofmarketingtransformation.com, where each episode will provide one valuable message to guide you on your journey of marketing transformation. Tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Zach Marino and Rockwell Felder of Squadcast, and Twyla Kay, a professional relationship coach. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.